This is an interview, a third session of an interview with Bride Pearl. It's now May 10th, 1988. I'm Morris Mayo doing the interview
for the University Archives Oral History Project, and we're talking in his office in journalism. And the premise of my questions is that current problems that Madison's having with extension date back to the extension merger, when in fact many people say that the whole thing, the system merger, was in part a consequence of that first merger, which is not necessarily true. But I would like you to begin with the extension merger, what your awareness, or if before that, if you had anything to do with the extension.
Well, I'm not. I think you'll find that back then and now, the whole thing, all the problems and the confusion hinge around several different definitions of what extension is. And one of these definitions, and it's the one that's most commonly used in universities all across the country, is a market definition. You provide short courses, seminars, and other kinds of continuing education programs to the public on a fee basis. And in many universities, these make a profit. And in most of them, they are only very lightly subsidized. And in many of them, they have no relationship with the research program. And in fact, there's no need for a research program to be related to them. A course on script writing is offered, and a fee is charged. And you may hire a local person who has written some scripts to conduct the course. This is one form of extension, and I think I'd call it the market-oriented model. Then you have one that I guess I'd call the extend the university model, and that's one where you say that in the course of building up a research staff and a teaching staff, you have information and you have skills and you have talents that could be of value to more than just the resident students. And now, part of the problem that we've had is that, of course, if you have only two major research institutions in the system, then you've got two where the research model, the extend the university model, is most appropriate, and you have others where it's less appropriate. I think it's appropriate for all of them, because I think good teachers in good fields throughout the system have something to extend, and I guess I would rather see an extension program that is based on the talents you have in the institutions, rather than an extension program that says, what are the things out there that people are willing to pay for? Now, at the time of the merger of extension into a separate institution, this state opted for the market model, because this was the building of a separate faculty. It was impossible to do this in agriculture because you couldn't get the range, but in all the other fields, a separate faculty was built in political science, in the arts, in language, in all of these fields. And in many cases, this faculty was built by pulling people out of the resident institutions and creating a separate group. So that then you said two things. You said that the program in the arts of the UW system, the extension program in the arts, will be carried on by a separate staff appointed solely as extension people, and that the people who are in the arts at the resident institutions have no extension responsibility, no funding, no obligation to work in extension in the state. This, over a 20-year period, this caused a great deal of friction. It caused friction for two reasons. One is that this is total violation of the Wisconsin idea tradition. If there's anything this state has believed in, and we've been unique in it, we haven't, others have not taken this view, we believed that it was important to make the resources of the university available to the state. Well, here we had for 20 years at Madison a public announced definition that that was not our job. So that's the one thing that caused friction. On the one side, there was pressure from lots of people to have access to the university's resources. On the other hand, there was a kind of an impulse on the part of faculty and staff and administrators not to abandon something that had served the state so well over the years. The other thing that caused trouble was the agricultural side of it, where simply there was no market mechanism in the agricultural extension work. This was all publicly funded. Fees were not charged. You had federal and state and county funds going into the support of it. And so it ran along on a different tradition than the market mechanism, and yet it ran in an agency that was committed to the market mechanism. And all of these things produced enough heat that, as I'm sure your other interviewers have told you, in about the very early 1980s, President O'Neill appointed his advisory committee on extension to tell him how to, or to suggest to him ways to solve the problem. They came up with some recommendations. He was not satisfied with those. And the regents then appointed a committee, and the regent committee came up with the notion that extension ought to be, extension program people ought to be integrated back into the resident institutions. Now, I find myself today, particularly in light of recent regent actions, wondering what went through the minds of that regent committee and what's going through the minds of the regents today. I think that regent committee wanted to move back to the extend the university model. They wanted to move back to a model where the whole institution became accessible, had a defined mission as accessible to the state. You've come at a good day, because last Friday the regents took a major step back toward creating an isolated, separate extension faculty by announcing that they wanted all of the people with extension responsibilities to have joint appointments with UW Extension. Well, this means then defining all people as either in extension or out of extension. And I guess I did work on a misapprehension during the period that I was Dean of Outreach here. I was under the impression that they wanted much wider broadening of the definition of people who were extension people. But they wanted to take people who were fundamentally in research and make sure that they did extend what they were doing. And now it's clear that we're moving back to you're either an extension staff member or you're not. If that's the case, I find it difficult to figure out what the purpose of the integration was. And I think they're either reversing what the regents did in their last go-around, or we worked for quite a time here under a misapprehension as to what it was that was wanted. Now, what we worked on was the reestablishing of extension faculty in resident departments. This has, I think everybody agrees, gone quite smoothly. It's gone well. It's gone because a lot of people put their necks out, and it's gone because quite a few assurances were given to the extension people that they were wanted and that they would be fairly treated. And I think they have been. And except for the matter of physical space, too many of them are still housed in separate extension facilities. Except for that, I'd say they really do feel and are a part of the UW-Madison. But we did that with the expectation that we'd really greatly broaden the number of people at Madison who were involved in and interested in extension. And now we're heading back to the situation where we define people as either in or out.
Well, why did they do this?
I have no idea. I think there's one where you'll have to ask the regents.
You have none at all?
some regents say that they had some argument from some extension faculty that they wanted to be involved in the faculty governance of extension. Mm. But there's no way to do that in extension as a full institution. You do that through departmentalization. So they aren't taking the next step. They're not creating departments in extension. And that, it seems to me, is what they would have to do to have true governance. For example, part of this action last Friday calls for an opportunity for extension input into the decisions about salaries and promotions of faculty. Well, you do that through a department. You don't do that administratively. But if they have no departmental structure, then the extension chancellor and the extension deans will be the source of input on their side, and the faculty will be the source of input on this side. And this is an administrative confusion.
Yes. They did have departments before, didn't they?
They were organized in the normal departmental mm-hmm. way. They were a university with colleges or the equivalent of, and with departments within those.
What do the extension people stand to gain from having a say in whether there is governance or not?
They think which there is extension people?
The ones that came from extension. I mean, you say they want to have a say.
Well, no, I did not. I said that the regents say that, some regents say that they have heard from some extension faculty members that they would like to have a say.
Oh.
My own readings on this are totally different. I find very little interest in the part of the integrated faculty who came to us from extension and are now UW-Madison faculty. I find very little interest in their part in the governance
yes,
of extension.
That's what one would expect. Then is it faculty members on other campuses?
You're asking me a question I can't answer.
Well, you must have guessed as to what their source of, what their regents' source is.
No, I think that's one where you have to ask the regents who made that decision.
So they may be
I consider it an irrational decision. It's yeah. not based on anything that makes any sense to me.
Continue from there.
Okay. I think I probably ought to be fair to, or try to be fair in describing one thing about this. It is a noble and logical idea to have a single extension program for the whole state based on the contributions of the different UW system universities. This makes sense. There's no reason why 10 different universities should be working with the Manitowoc High School on how to improve the teaching of French. We ought to say, we've planned this so that we'll direct our talents in different ways to multiply what we've got. Now, there are probably two ways to do this, and one takes a great deal of skill and ability, and that is to work closely with the whole bunch of chancellors and to weld their individual contributions in. The other is to try to take fiscal and personnel command and in effect, organize, staff, and direct the program. And this is what the extension program was up to the period of merger. And it made life very easy for extension administrators. And there's no question there's an effort to get back to that. Mm-hmm. And it's motivated by a desire not to have duplication, not to have competition, not to have waste. And of the two ways of achieving that, the one quiet and careful diplomacy with the various chancellors, and the other take command of staffing and fiscal and other decisions, I think the latter choice is being taken because the ability to carry out the former one isn't there.
Mm-hmm. So extension still wants a say in appointments, and this is against the statutes. Is that right?
Well, they want to say appointments, promotions, and salary decisions. And yes, there's a good deal of problem with the statutes on this. Chapter 36 says that promotion to tenure is based on a recommendation by the executive committee of a department. This one has some legal implications. I would think that extension's next step would have to be to organize on a departmental basis. I don't see how they can carry on governance functions that deal with personnel without having something other than just extension administration. But that's speculative. It's simply that if the regents do propose to assign to them a responsibility for personnel decisions, then somebody sooner or later is going to say, if we do this, the next step is to do it in the university tradition with some sort of faculty review, not simply administrative action. Because at the moment, all they've got is an administrative structure to do it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that does violate both the traditions of the university system and, I guess, regent regulations of the past, and in the case of tenured appointments, Chapter 36 of the statutes.
It sounds to me, since extension is largely a matter of, this is a Madison campus affair, really, and it's of greatest concern to the Madison campus, isn't that right?
No, it's concerned to all universities.
But I mean this recent, there are more people involved, isn't it right that it's...
The largest number of people by far are at Madison and Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Well, no. The largest number are in the county extension staffs. But they are part of UW Extension and have been all along.
Mm-hmm. But we're talking about faculty appointments now.
Yeah.
And those are mostly in Madison, aren't they?
Madison and Milwaukee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if they are controlling appointments, they have much more control of extension than they used to have.
Well, nobody has ever quarreled with their ability to have some impact on appointments, because a position falls vacant. Let's say that we have a specialist in the training of law enforcement officers, and that position becomes vacant. It would be quite proper for UW Extension to say either that's an item of great interest and great priority, and we do want to continue it, or it's an item of low priority and we want to continue something else. There's never been any quarrel about that. And there's never been any quarrel about, say we decide we are going to replace a certain person with a new person in the same area or some related area. There's never been any quarrel about extension's ability and right to sit down with us and say, let's work out a job description that suits us both, a job description that strengthens our program on campus and off. We've done this repeatedly. There's no difficulty on that. One step further, when a person is interviewed for that job, there is no particular difficulty in having extension involved in the search committee if they have people with the talents and interests to work on it.
Now, who in extension is involved in this, in a search, for instance, if there aren't departments?
Well, that's part of the problem, that to have an administrator from a different discipline involved in the search doesn't make a lot of sense. But this has been carried out quite amiably. In other words, their interest is the same as ours, to find a very good person and convince that person to come here. And we haven't had difficulty on that.
That's been going on very quietly, hasn't it?
Yeah.
One doesn't hear about it at all.
Yeah. So, well, in fact, that one of those we hired about 2 years ago, with very good cooperation between me and John Schmidt, the Dean of General Extension, person came here in one of our resident departments to do extension work, financed primarily out of extension. And the resident department within a year was asking the person to be chair of the department.
Goodness.
And that has happened in the past. People like Bob Mulvihill and in Spanish, and Henry Hill in history, and I guess Les Seifert in German. There have been a variety of extension appointees who have been chairs of resident departments. That couldn't be done in all the period when we had separation, but it was resumed again when we had the integration. Hasn't occurred yet because this particular person said no, but it will sooner or later. Things will be timed right. So that was a person where the position description was worked out jointly between us and Extension. The statement as to the kind of person we wanted. I don't think they were represented on the search committee, and neither was I, because I was administrative too. Mm-hmm. But the appointment that came forward, both John Schmidt and I looked at the qualifications, said they looked good, and the appointment was made. And that kind of thing is no great problem. There is a problem, I think, on salary decisions and promotion decisions. Because
you want to go on?
No, we'd covered that before. It's the problem that these have to be made by faculty, and that there's no faculty base in Extension to provide that.
Mm-hmm. What's happening now suggests that people in Extension are unhappy with the way things have been going.
In Extension administration? Or?
Yeah.
Well, I think probably they are.
And yet you say that as far as the Madison campus is concerned, it's been going nicely. You've had amicable arrangements.
Actually, statewide it's been going nicely. The program is stronger than it has ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more activity. The people who were integrated into Extension and are now integrated into Madison are doing more in programming than they have ever done. It's continuing to grow.
Well, then who do you think is unhappy, and at what level does the discontent start in Extension?
Where do you find it in your discussions?
I haven't talked to anybody in Extension.
No, I think obviously the Chancellor of Extension is troubled by not having a faculty that is his who are answerable to him.
That does seem.
He has to work, as I mentioned earlier, diplomatically through other chancellors and other deans rather than telling his employees to do certain things. And that is troublesome. But that's what I thought that the regents had in mind and were directing. And I am sure that the unhappiness on the part of the Chancellor of Extension is that his ability to direct things, to take command on things, is greatly reduced.
The system seems to be assisting in this effort.
Assisting how?
Well, apparently they haven't given Madison a chance to comment on what's been happening and to present its side of things. Well, let me
I'm
ask,
not sure.
where does the system administration stand on this?
In this particular thing, I believe system administration is terribly responsive to the regents. There is no system view on this. There's a regent view, and the system is prepared to go along with what the regents want. And, of course, part of your problem there is you have a new cast of characters on the regents. I guess none of the regents who were involved in integration are around anymore.
Really? Because that was, what, 1982 or so, wasn't it?
Yeah, but Dave Beckwith chaired the committee. And Russell O'Hara was a member of it. I've forgotten who the third member was, but it surely isn't somebody who's still on the board. So the board now has not gone through the rationale that the regents then went through.
And hasn't checked into what they did?
I don't know. You'll have to ask somebody else than me.
All right. The regents get their ideas from people, though. They don't cook them up, presumably.
Yeah, but keep in mind, neither of the system principal people now were around then.
Mm.
The academic vice president is new and the president is new. So you got a discussion here that is as if it were starting all over again.
I find that incredible, that no people haven't paid attention to what happened before.
Well, the unanswered question is, what were the reasons that the regents before called for integration? What did they expect to gain out of it? And my assumption is that they expected to gain a much wider faculty group interested in the extension role.
Yes.
And that is obviously not what the present regents believe was the goal. And nobody has been able to pin the present regents as to what they believe the goal of integration was. I think they're somewhat at a loss. They're not, they're much taken with the idea of a unified statewide program that has no duplication, no competition. Mm-hmm. This then drives them to the belief that you'd get this with a unified staff and a unified budget and unified administrative leadership, and indeed you do. Mm. But that these are trade-offs, and it sounds to me as if the trade-offs that the regents of 6 years ago wanted have been rejected now, and the other side of the trade-off taken. Either position is logical, but it's not logical to bounce back and forth.
Hmm.
Sure, how much more I have to say on this.
Well, I would like to ask you, I've gotten the impression that the regents are, I will say, have it in for Madison, and that this is a way of we are restricting this interview. This is a way of one way of taking some control away from Madison. Now, that may be wrong.
I think I would roll that question back if I were you. Because, first of all, you cannot have a Board of Regents that is opposed to the principal university in the system. That can't be. It defies common sense. They may have different ideas as to what's good for the system and good for Madison than I have or someone else has, but the idea that the Regents have it in for Madison and are making these decisions on that basis is simply...
Hmm.
No, I do think that the difference in the fundamental problem in merger, that we try to integrate two universities with a research mission and a group of others that don't have a research mission, and try as much as we can to have uniform policies that apply to all, has caused problems over and over, and it'll continue to cause problems. It's built into the structure. And when I said that the model that I think the Regent Committee was following when they adopted integration was one of extending broadly all of the university's resources, obviously that's a much more relevant model to a research university than to a university that's primarily teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said before, I think there are ways that the primarily teaching university has things to extend. So the model isn't inapplicable, but it applies much more to this kind of university, because all over this campus you got people who have things that they could do, ways that they could help, contributions they could make to the state, and you have considerably more of that, or you ought to have, at a good research university than you do at simply an instructional institution. Now, you design a model that works just fine for the instructional institutions, and it's going to have problems for the research institutions and vice versa. In fact, I'm convinced that the decentralized model is better for all of them, and that the role of the extension administration or system should be to orchestrate the contributions of each and make them fit together rather than create a unity. You could have the same question rise in relation to teaching. We've got a whole bunch of universities, each with a teaching mission. Now, how do we get coordination? How do we keep them from being duplicative or competitive? We do it by clear-cut policies at the regent level and system level, by directives from them, by an awful lot of judicious leading and planning and coordinating with some friction, but it's done. We do have a teaching program in the universities in this system that is mutually supportive. And we didn't do it by creating a separate university of instruction with a separate chancellor and separate staff. So that kind of structure will work. And I am sure that over and over the question has come up of handling extension as analogous to instruction and to having in system administration the leadership for extension, so that then you don't get into the question of should extension have program staff of its own. Obviously it wouldn't if it were system administration. And should extension have overall authority over this function throughout the system? If it were in system administration, obviously it would. But there's no question that as a chancellor parallel to other chancellors, it's hard for the chancellor of extension to exercise very much authority, and that's been a source of friction. There's another source of friction, and that is that the various things that extension's involved in compete with one another. For example, it isn't simply that extension has to decide whether to put resources at Madison or Milwaukee or River Falls. It has WHA and WHA-TV and the whole telecoms network in its realm too, and it has the county staffs in its realm also. So that you say, shall we cut out a state specialist on weed control in order to put in a county person in Vilas County? That kind of choice has to be made, and that's a conflict of interest and a difficult one that continues to cause trouble.
That's been said a number of times, and has no one addressed this? It seems
no
so
one has
plain.
Addressed it. For example, in the last biennial budget, extension got additional money from the legislature for three things, as I recall: a dairy profitability center, a economic development, and equipment for the radio television setup. In filling in its request for these, extension had to decide how to allocate its request. And when the money came back, it had to decide how to allocate the money. And for two biennia now, there has been money come into extension from the legislature, out of which I guess a total of 25 or 30,000 has come to the UW-Madison. And we've gotten as much as any other university has. The bulk of it has gone to the other things for which extension is responsible. That would be difficult for that to happen if the extension leadership were housed in system administration. It still might happen, but it wouldn't be, because internally the chancellor of extension had to deal with an internal conflict of interest.
Has nobody protested? I mean, the legislature did earmark these funds?
No.
It granted the funds on the basis that this is what they were going to, isn't that right?
In part, but with considerable latitude. See, one of the principles in university budgeting has been that you greatly prefer not to have the legislature earmark funds. That's what you have regents and a system administration for. They're supposed to use some wisdom in deciding how to allocate. And so in this case, there was some tying of the funds. The first biennial, there was no tying, and but ordinarily the legislature doesn't and shouldn't do this.
But it did allocate the money on the attractiveness of the notions of these three things, you say.
Sure, but it didn't put a dollar sign. Yeah. As I recall, it didn't put a dollar sign on them. And customarily, it doesn't put a dollar sign on them. It accepts a program and it says, we're giving Extension or the UW-Madison X dollars. See, right now, it's giving to the system, which has then allocated to Madison additional teaching positions for the purpose of reducing class size and offering more classes. And it hasn't told us do this in history or geography or mathematics. It said do it. Mm-hmm. It said we'll look later and we'll see what you did. And that's the ideal way, and it's the way that the budgeting for extension has been and will be done. And I don't think I'd want it any other way. I sure wouldn't want each institution going to the legislature, bypassing the system to try to get earmarked funding. Your whole system structure would break down if you had that. There's enough of that as
granted,
it is.
But the fact is that do you think extension was justified in deciding that the money ought to go where they in fact put it?
It's not where I would have put it, but sure they were justified. It was assigned to them, and that's the structure.
So anything they wanted to do.
Yeah.
Well, it's a question of somebody's judgment.
Yep.
As if somebody else might have made a different judgment.
That's right. Hmm. And I think a more defensible kind of judgment might even have been the same one, but a more defensible kind of judgment could be made by a system administration than by a chancellor who appears to be parallel to the other chancellors and who has part of his program that is his own, like the other chancellors, and part of his program that belongs to the other chancellors too. It's an impossible spot to have the chancellor of extension in. He can't it takes a great deal of wisdom to make good decisions in that setting.
And nobody has said to the regents, could you do something about this?
Well, this is one of the options that has, when President O'Neill rejected the President's Advisory Committee report, this was what was recommended.
Were you one of the people that prepared it?
Nope, I had nothing to do with it.
Did you approve, did you think it was a good series of recommendations?
Sure, but I had nothing, I never saw the recommendations until after they had been received and I guess rejected. But, of course, I think it makes much more sense to administer extension out of the system administration in the same way that instruction and research and other functions are than to administer it through a dummy corporation that is maybe a separate university of extension, but maybe not. I don't know how we can avoid having continued confusion as long as that goes on. I predict about 10 more years of it.
And then?
Well, then somebody will straighten it out.
I hope it's in the document somewhere why Neil rejected it.
Well, I don't know. I have no idea what. For one thing, by that time
O'Neill,
the regents were very much interested in it. And it sort of shifted from a presidential to a regent matter. Mm. But I think it's true also that O'Neill was not happy with the idea of, or did prefer the idea of a continued chancellor and a continued separate institution called Extension.
It really boils down to money, doesn't it? I mean, isn't Madison, it doesn't,
it doesn't have as control of as much money as it would have for its appointments?
No, nothing of the kind. It's not really a money matter at all.
Hmm.
You see, the extension program is 80% self-supporting, the general extension program.
Oh, I guess I was thinking of cooperative extension.
Co-op's another matter. And there has been a maintenance of county staff at the expense of state specialist staff.
And I understand.
I think that's a mistake, because I think your county staff depends on the quality and the range of the state specialist staff. But again, too, that's a decision the Chancellor of Extension was entitled to make, and made it.
County staff is a nice political base. You don't comment on that.
Well, I continue to have to straighten out your questions, I'm afraid. County staff is more difficult to get rid of, because you do have the people in a county who have been used to the services of a particular person. See, co-op extension has been hit by federal funding problems. These haven't involved directly cuts in the federal funding. What they've involved is unfunded pay increases. So to the extent that federal money is in the support of our county and state staff, and we give pay increases in this state, they're not funded from the federal side, so they have to be funded by cannibalization.
Mm-hmm.
And so cuts had to be made. There were positions that had to go. It wasn't a thing over which anybody had any choice. And when you have positions that have to go, it's easier to cut out a veterinary scientist, a veterinary extension person, than to cut out a county worker in Vilas County, because the county people in Vilas County are interested in that program. There's a constituency.
Mm.
Now, they did make cuts, and they took a good deal of courage and a good deal of determination. They made cuts in the county staff, but they cut the state staff worse, which is, as I said, the reverse of what I think you would do in a first-rate program.
It wasn't my idea that the county agents that I have, this has been suggested that a reason for keeping the county agent group strong was that they provided a base of support in the state.
Mm-hmm.
So, you say, correct me my questions, I'm just...
yeah. See, whether you have 300 county staff or 280 doesn't affect what I think is the implication of your question, that you got political... But, and so cuts were not a worry. If that were a consideration, they were not a worry on that account. They were a worry on a real and true account, that if you have a youth club leader in Vilas County who has been taking care of these 4-H clubs for years, and you now say, we're taking that one away, you have hit people where it hurts. That's quite a different thing from saying political base.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the same thing in the sense that local people are concerned about the service that reaches them directly. And that's why it's much harder to make cuts there than to make cuts at the state level.
Have you heard any complaints about the kinds of people that are being appointed to the positions in the counties? About their training, their background, their agricultural connections?
No, as a matter of fact, there are many more of them with advanced degrees now than there ever have been before.
Advanced agriculture degrees.
Mm-hmm. There was a time when they were primarily straight from a bachelor's degree. Now nearly all of them have master's degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a pretty good job of keeping themselves up on new developments. So, agriculture has changed over the years, and so have agricultural college graduates, but this, if you were to use straight qualitative measures, this county staff, I would say, is clearly as good as ever. Now, it is more there are more of the county staff who come from the non-research-based agricultural colleges, Platteville and River Falls. Mm-hmm. But they've done a great deal, I would say, to overcome any handicap that that is by graduate work. Mm. And I'm not sure how much of a handicap it is.
It puts less of agricultural knowledge into the counties, I suppose.
Not necessarily. Yeah. Those are agricultural colleges at Platteville and at River Falls. And they do teach the same kind of courses that are taught here. And the only real difference is that there are many more of the faculty here who are currently carrying on research programs than at Platteville and River Falls. But that the difference, any measurable difference that makes in the quality of graduates, I think would be hard to demonstrate.
All right. In connection with this dairy productivity program, mm-hmm. Instead of giving that to Madison, what the system or extension did, or the system, I guess.
Extension.
Was to say you can request money for this, but you'll have to request it along with all the other campuses who will also be requesting things, and you might get it and you might not. Is that right?
Sure.
Do you think that was right?
First of all, by the way, it was a dairy profitability center, not productivity.
Okay, yes, productivity is a bad word, isn't it?
No, profitability is a different concept.
Yes, yes.
And there was a decision, I understand, in Extension to retain that profitability center in UW Extension as a program operated by UW Extension with pieces of it farmed out. Mm. And yes, I think that's a mistake. I don't think Extension should be in the business of conducting programs. They ought to be in the business of coordinating activities that are located at the various institutions. I don't think they're in position to coordinate, to conduct a dairy profitability program. I don't think they have or should have the staffing. If they added staff people who are really capable of taking the leadership in that, they'd be adding the kind of staff people who ought to be at Platteville or River Falls or Madison. And if they don't add people who are capable of taking the leadership, they ought not to be taking the leadership.
So this isn't really part of their mission, is it? Or it couldn't be?
It's a different definition of mission. Hmm. Their argument is that this is a statewide... Oh, I should let them make their own argument. But I will finish that sentence. That this is a statewide function that involves more than one institution, therefore the only way to coordinate it is for them to operate it. Mm. That is not the only way to coordinate anything. That's the easy way to coordinate it. But it's not the best way, and it's not the only way.
Mm. But watchful regents might have stepped in and say that this is not really what you should be doing.
You wouldn't want even watchful regents to micromanage in that way. Mm-hmm. Once they have established a particular kind of structure, the structure produces the actions. And if they assign the Chancellor of Extension that role, which they seem to have done, then the Chancellor of Extension is going to go ahead and make that kind of decision. I would argue that they should have assigned a different role, but they haven't. They should have assigned the role of coordinating and combining, melding together individual university contributions, not the role of conducting a program. But they are rapidly moving back toward assigning to Extension the role of conducting programs, I think. And having done that, it's not their job to second guess whether a particular program decision was right or not. Their decision was whether UW Extension should have the role of carrying on Dairy Profitability Center programs. And having decided that, then it's that kind of a...
You've been vice chancellor for a number of years. In the whole perspective of what you had to deal with and what's being dealt with now, how important really is this whole extension issue to Madison?
The reason it's important to Madison is that, let me get at this by describing some other universities. People have said that one of the characteristics of parallel departments at University of California, Berkeley, and here, is that a political scientist at Berkeley is first of all a political scientist and a member of the national and world community of political scientists. Secondly, maybe a faculty member in the Letters and Science College there. Thirdly, maybe a faculty member in UC Berkeley. And finally, not at all, a citizen of California with a concern for California. You get very much the opposite thing here. You take someone like Leon Epstein, who just retired as professor of political science after 40 years or so on the staff. Leon has the same national and world stature that the best people at Berkeley do. But Leon is also a faculty member in his college, a faculty member in this university, and a citizen of this state with an interest in the politics of this state, the government of this state. He is known to and works with political leaders in the state. He's respected by them, and he contributes to better functioning of the political processes here. And...
This is the second tape of the 1988 interview with Bright Hill. Okay.
Well, no, this was one of the unique contributions of this state. One of the unique things, the involvement of governmental, of university people in public affairs. And I can cite this in all kinds of contexts, everything from genetic counseling to cancer diagnosis. And there are many universities where you don't have that mission. For example, our cancer people here are very much interested in a state cancer diagnosis, early diagnosis program. We had in physics for a time a man very much interested in the safety of radiological devices in dentists and doctors' offices, John Cameron, who worked carefully with the medical and dental profession in this state and hospitals to try to maintain quality. All right, this you do not find in other states, and you do not find it in an institution where you say, Cameron and Epstein ought to be working on teaching and research. They have no extension responsibility. You only find it where you say, you do have a statewide responsibility. It's part of your function. Now, you have to define extension more broadly than this narrow market orientation. But this is why it's important to Madison. This institution owes its reputation to what it has done in the ordinary life of ordinary people. It doesn't owe its reputation to being a great teaching or even a great research institution, because there are a lot of others. But uniquely, it has had an impact on the state. And I think that should be protected, should have been protected, and is in jeopardy. And that's why this is important. It's important because, well, when Jim McCamey came here as a young political science professor from very senior positions in U.S. government, went out in the state and dropped in small towns or visited with governmental people, was continually astounded to find that he was welcome as a university person. That, oh, you're from the university, come in, let's talk. He had, I don't know where he had been before, but he had been places where there was either hostility to the university people or indifference. They weren't part of the community. They were part of the community here. And that's something we ought to treasure, we ought to preserve.
That was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Well, when Jim... But it would still be true today.
You think so?
Yes, I do. And I have some reason to think, some reason for believing it so. But I think it's in jeopardy. And it's in jeopardy if you redefine extension as being a small group of people whose job is to carry out extension, and they are the extension group, and no one else is.
But you've found a convenient word for that, outreach. And then you can say that extension goes on, but Madison has its outreach program. Isn't that right?
Well, but you have to have things budgeted, you know. You can't say, all right, Leon, this semester you're going to teach one fewer courses and you're going to go out and spend your time with county boards.
Mm-hmm.
There's a budgetary question here. And what you have to do is have appropriate budget allocations to let you capitalize on the resources and talents you have.
But these programs, these things, not programs, these things you've been talking about, the medical, the other things, were not extension activities. They were, I mean, John Cameron, was it?
Well, for a time, John did this as a private enterprise outside the university,
yeah.
A non-profit enterprise,
mm-hmm.
because there was no structure within the university to do it.
But did he ever get onto the extension?
No,
it
never.
It doesn't sound like an extension thing at all.
Why not?
Well, because it's more of a research in a concern, a public service. Extension isn't a public service.
It isn't? I would have thought that was all it was.
All right, well, we could drop that. But...
I would have thought that you, if you had to define extension briefly, you would define it as making the skills and the talents and the knowledge of university people available off the campus.
But you've just said that that isn't the way extension has defined itself recently. It's been defining itself as a money-making...
Well, less that than defining itself as a separate, isolated staff.
Yeah.
They all go together, but... When you have a separate, isolated staff, and they are defined as the extension staff, then you're not defining extension as making the talents and skill and knowledge of the whole university available to the public.
Yes, I agree.
Those are the two choices.
But the fact is, Madison has gone on with things like this. It hasn't stopped in these years that extension's been off by itself.
It has greatly slowed down, and these have been carried on with great difficulty. There is no easy way to carry them on.
You mean in former times, extension budget money could have been used for some of these things?
You could even have, extension budget money could have been used, or you could even have receipts and expenditures come in,
mm-hmm.
which you can't have when you don't have a budget item for it.
Oh, I see.
Even the travel of an individual let's say, for example, that we decided, and we sure better be deciding this, that we want to greatly improve the teaching of languages in the high schools of the state. Should this be a job for the people who are defined as extension, or should it be defined as a job for the people who are in the language departments? I would hope for the people in the language departments. But how do you even pay their travel to go out to Richland Center to carry on a workshop for high school French teachers, much less give them any release time to go out? If you have a separate extension staff and budget and define it as an isolated mechanism, then you tell the French department here, stay out of this. This is not your affair. Or if you go out and put on a workshop at Richland Center, do it at your own expense, including paying your own travel.
Mm.
That could be broken down and should be broken down. And we will desperately need it in the next half dozen years as we begin to worry more about the teaching of languages in high school. In the more exotic languages, like Russian and Chinese, we're the only institution that can provide this, and we have nobody in extension who's a Russian language or a Chinese language extension specialist, and we won't have. Now, what mechanism can extension devise that will let our Chinese or our Russian language people work with the high schools to improve the materials and the quality of teaching? And how can we do this? We can't do it if we define a separate extension staff. We can only define it if we say that it's the role of the UW-Madison to put what it has of timely importance to the state at the disposal of the state.
Was this being done in the period when the integration was taking place? Did you have access to money, and was there an increase in this kind of thing?
In the last four years?
Yeah.
No, this has been a great deal of the argument. You see, Extension's view has been that all funding has to go through Extension, that all programming has to originate, has to be cleared there. And I can give you a specific example. We proposed that a vacancy, a resignation, a retirement that had occurred in Extension, that we take half of the vacancy and make it an Extension person working in the area of theater, and that we work with the theater arts department, that they and Dean Cronin in LNS take the other half of the position for teaching and research. So we got a person who is half-time teaching and half-time teaching research, half-time extension, to work with community theater of various kinds, repertory theater, amateur productions, and so on, in this state. We were turned down on this, and the funding was removed on the argument that this doesn't relate to economic development. Now, we had no appeal for this, and we had, as a result, no way to put a good person to work in this area. I happen to think it's an area that has a close relationship with economic development, because in the tourist areas, certainly the local theater is...
Of course.
And there are other reasons. It's a community endeavor that does something for the well-being of a community. But the point is that we had no opportunity even to use the position, even if we had funded it ourselves. Mm. Even if we'd said, all right, we'll charge a fee for our services big enough to fund this. Sorry, the FTE, the position, was no longer available. And that's a unilateral decision made administratively within Extension. And again, if your model is that Extension is a market device headed by one person who organizes his staff and his program, fine, then this is a sound decision. If you argue that it's extending the resources of this university, no, we'd have been much better off adding to our theater arts department a person who cared about community theater and who worked day by day with community theater people. It would have been a great addition.
Then you say there was no appeal. Nobody in system.
Where do you appeal?
Or...
You go to the regents about a question like that.
That would be going behind.
You don't even go to the system with a question like that. Although it's much harder to accept that kind of decision when it comes from a parallel organization, another chancellor, than if it came from system.
Basam Shakashiri, is it his program for high school teaching? No, it isn't. Who's the man who runs the high school, improving high school teaching of chemistry?
Well, Basam runs it out of National Science Foundation.
Uh-huh. I mean, that's an outreach kind of thing, isn't it?
Sure, but he's in the employ of the National Science Foundation, not of the UW-Madison.
I see.
Nor Extension. And if he came back here, I don't know whether he's back now or not, but if and when he comes back here, there will be no way to make this an Extension activity.
I thought it was somebody referred to a program in the chemistry department. Maybe that's something else that is going on.
Well, there are some volunteer efforts, but these are not, I don't know. I don't think this is an organized, formalized, budgeted, and staffed Extension program.
No, not Extension, Madison. It's a Madison program. That was
no,
the
well,
point.
It's a voluntary program.
It was a Madison outreach. Yeah.
It's a voluntary program that comes out of the individual's hide and where there isn't even a way to pay the travel expense. No, there are several things of that kind. There is in the physics department a regular program called Physics Can Be Fun. Kind of dog and pony show where some of the wonders of physics are presented to kids 8 to 12 years old. And we put this on videotape a year ago, and the videotape is just being widely used. It's, in my view, a very appropriate Extension activity. But there's no way the fellow who did it simply did it as a contribution over and above his regular work.
Who did it? Let's give him credit. Do you know?
Yeah. Professor Sprott.
Uh-huh.
And the tapes, we simply argued that this is not a bad use of some teaching money, so we used money not budgeted for Extension to produce the tapes, which we have then marketed at cost. And they're being used quite widely. But there should be a way to regularize that kind of contribution.
Is there any overall dollars and cents figure anybody would be able to put to what Madison is doing on its own for outreach at this point?
There's no dollars and cents figure, but a couple of years ago we did a survey of all faculty and academic staff as to contributions they were making to municipal, county, state, national, or international governmental agencies, governmental and charitable.
You mean in time and learning
and consultative service, unpaid, and we found more than 800 who were willing to specify, here are the things I've done and the agencies I've done them with. And they were a very impressive range. In such odd things as this, the State Department of Public Instruction gets an application from a teacher whose teacher training was in Hungary, let's say. The only place they can turn to know whether that application makes sense or not is to the graduate school here, where we have graduate examiners who are pretty well informed about the nature of the teaching program, the levels of teaching, what a particular certificate means. So we have in the grad school a woman who has regularly provided that service for the Department of Public Instruction. I call it Extension. And I call it indispensable because there's nobody else who can do it. But there's no way to think of her as an Extension appointment because this is a 2 hours every second month kind of an enterprise. It isn't a big demand of time or effort, but it's something that no one else can do. And among these 800 odd that had listed the things they had been doing, there were all kinds of things like this. What kind of decisions is it safe to make on issuing a driver's license for a person with some kind of neurological problem? The Department of Transportation turns to our Department of Neurology and gets good advice. Shall we issue a driver's license to this person? What is the nature and kind of risk? That's one of the kinds of extension that I wish we would accept at the system level and at the region's level as the kind of thing we ought to be doing.
Has anyone ever made this argument?
Oh, I imagine so. But it falls on deaf ears in the sense that the answer comes back, well, you do that anyway, and it doesn't cost budget and it doesn't take time. What's the problem? Well, the problem is that slowly, it seems to me, the propensity to do this gets eroded, and we move more and more in the direction that I described Berkeley as being, where our people are primarily in their discipline, and they're not primarily a part of the community or the state. And that is true of Berkeley, and it's not true of Madison. And we ought to ask ourselves, why do we have this difference? I say it's historic. And how long can we maintain it in the face particularly of young faculty members here being told, get your research done, get your publication done, get tenure, and whether you've contributed neurological advice to the Department of Transportation has no bearing on this. Don't waste your time on it. And that's what all the forces today are, that's where they're all driving. And I think that as an institution, we should be finding some ways to slow this process and to continue to say that for resident faculty members with research and teaching functions, we still value, cherish, pay some attention to public service and the extending of knowledge and abilities.
Well, you certainly meant it when you said at the beginning it's a matter of definition, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Have you talked to Chancellor Shalala about this?
Only very briefly, I am sure that she understands this fully, and I am sure that she's in sympathy with it, this idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure, too, that she will do as she should, whatever the regents have decided they want to have done. And if, as a kind of a final word, the regents have not made it clear that they understand what they want to do. And until they do, the confusion will continue.
But she is the person who, because she goes out in the state and talks about Madison, can present this idea.
Oh, she's well aware of the role Madison, the role universities have played in this state.
But what she can present the idea that's being eroded because of definitions of extension.
Would be a little hard to prove that it's being eroded.
Hmm.
I mean, what is your evidence? It's all kinds of disasters are visible after they've occurred.
Uh-huh.
I can see small pieces of evidence that it's moving away, but if somebody said, oh, come on, prove that the University of Wisconsin-Madison will not be playing the role in the state 20 years from now that it is now, I'd say, how can you prove it? I'm just positive it's so. Yeah. And anyone else who's positive it isn't is entitled to an opinion, too.
You said final word just then. Are you talking about final words? We haven't gone into the history yet, and I want to do
history?
That sometime. Well, I still would like to have your say on events that were happening in 1965 and during your vice chancellorship under Young. And
in that period, Extension had already been removed and was a separate agency, and my relationship to it was, there was none.
Well, Pound says, for instance, that at one point he alerted you to the fact that Extension was considering what its research, what it could do in the way of research.
Mm-hmm.
And Pound says that, this is not a view, but he says of Young and Shane, that they didn't do anything until it was too late to stop what was happening at the time of the merger. So I assume, I know you were away.
There's some trouble with the chronology here since... but...
What?
Well, Extension was created as a separate institution 5 years before I had anything to do with UW administration.
Mm-hmm.
And Shane became vice chancellor after I left.
Yes.
And I think you're talking about the merger of the UW system.
Yes.
But there was no change, no appreciable change in the Extension role at the time of merger of that system that I can see. And I can't see when Pound would have alerted me to that problem, but...
Well, the notion that Extension would have a research function and it wouldn't be left on the Madison campus.
Mm-hmm.
No, I realize you wouldn't... I'm just saying, I'm pointing out to you that Pound felt that there were serious problems that were not being thought about in Madison, which, of course, was thinking of other things at the time. As the merger got underway, and I realize you can't talk about that, but I'm saying there is material in the past that it would be interesting to have your views on.
Yeah. No, I think the...
And then your period as dean of outreach, I just...
See, I sort of... stumbled into the Extension role in the sense that when the regents decided that there would be an integration of programs into Madison, the chancellor decided that there ought to be somebody who oversaw the movement of these programs and organizations into Madison and did the negotiating with the dean of engineering and the dean of business and the dean of pharmacy and the other deans to try to work out an orderly move, and with the university committee and faculty senate and so on. And he asked me if I would take that job on for a couple of years, and I said I would. And that's what I was engaged in almost entirely, the mechanics of getting a faculty and academic staff group that was hired in different ways at a different institution under different rules with different commitments to them, and in a different departmental structure, integrated into the UW-Madison with as little friction and as little antagonism and as little explosiveness as possible. And that's what I spent 2 years doing.
Was it a rewarding job?
Well, that part of it was, yeah. I thought everybody concerned approached that constructively, and I think it might be worth your while to talk to some of the people in various units that were integrated over. I think generally they felt that they were well received here and that both the legal and moral commitments that they were entitled to have were met.
Mm.
And that's rewarding, yeah. But it was not rewarding in the sense that I did this all in the misapprehension that we were moving toward a structure in which Extension would be an identified function of the whole institution, and that we would not isolate these faculty as we moved them over, that they would become melded into the whole group.
Mm-hmm.
And on our side, I'd say there was a great deal of support for that. Our departments and our colleges were very much in sympathy with that idea. And we have not had support from Extension or the regents. As witness the notion the other day that we'll now have separate joint appointments for the people who so painfully were integrated. We're now going to disintegrate them. But, yeah, the rest of it was rewarding, and I think has gone well and been a good thing. And I don't think we'll be unwound. I think these people are part of this institution.
Hmm. So they're going to stay then. Then they're not going to be put back in their departments in extension.
I can't imagine that any Board of Regents or any Chancellor of Extension could be mad enough to go that far back.
Hmm. Hope you're right. Let me just, you don't really want to have a lot to say about the extension merger. I had a notion that, do you think that was the cause of all the subsequent problems?
Sure.
You do?
Sure. I think Fred Harrington was himself unaware of the two different models, and did believe that you could set up a separate institution to extend. It's a contradiction in terms. Extension is extending something. And to set up extension as an organization that is self-contained and doesn't extend is odd, to say the least.
That's a nice point.
I don't know where you could get the background on this, but it's my very strong feeling now that Fred Harrington foresaw a decline in co-op extension. Federal funding for agriculture was going to decline, and there would be a corresponding increase in federal funding for urban extension, and the institutions that were geared up and ready for that would really be able to move. And whereas agricultural extension, you could say that's a logical mission for the College of Agriculture, urban extension, there's no group that is logically ready to receive it. So I think he thought he was creating an organization called UW Extension that would then be ready to receive federal funding for urban extension. Mm-hmm. And then build your program from there. And since that didn't come about,
But there are other things. There's the structure that was set up for the thing, which, I mean, perhaps it would have gone better if a different structure had been set up. Was that something that you thought about?
Yeah, I thought it at the time, although I was not directly involved, and I still think it. The idea of setting up in a university system a separate institution.
No, I meant the structure within Extension, where you have the deans and the directors of the human development and environmental. Do you remember that?
Well, yes, but if you're going to have a separate institution, well, that dictates that you'll have colleges or equivalents within it and departments within that.
Mm. So had to do it that way.
Well, of course. I don't know how you have a chancellor of an organization called UW Extension, but don't have any academic structure within it. Mm. If there was a mistake, it was in setting up the institution and the role.
Right. What if a different director had been appointed?
Wouldn't have made a bit of difference.
You don't think so? You think McNeil was the first director? You think that?
Oh, you had a whole variety of directors, and Henry Algren, who was dedicated and an intelligent person, wasn't any more successful in making the thing work than Don McNeil was.
Yes, but hadn't he lost interest?
Who?
Oh, Algren, by that time. I mean, Strother had taken over.
Who had?
Strother, who, he was in effect the, he was good chancellor, I gather, but he was the vice chancellor.
Well.
So you think that wasn't a part of it?
I don't see how you can have people as different as McNeil, Algren, Strother, Gene Evans, and Boyle. Five people who range clear across the spectrum in practically any quality you want to mention, and they all have the same problems with it. or the rest of the institution has the same problem in dealing with it. No, I think it's structural. And I think it goes back to the notion that either this is a separate institution or it isn't, UW Extension. If it is, go all the way and treat it as one and recognize what you're losing and what you're gaining. Or treat it as a coordinating body and recognize again what you're losing, direct control and authority, and what you're gaining.
Do you see any link between that and Pound's interest in his, he wanted a consortium for research with in connection with Platteville and River Falls, and then he was talking about a state college of agriculture. Would there have been some notion that he was getting very powerful and
that again is the kind of question, since you know, all I can say is I don't know.
I mean, you didn't know, think anything about
it. I have talked with Pound about the consortium for research, and that was a well-motivated idea to recognize that you've got good faculty members, dedicated ones, at Platteville and River Falls, mm-hmm. and at Stevens Point, who have research interests that they can't achieve in an institution that doesn't have a research mission. And so if you can tie them into the research wing of this institution, you make things work better for them. And that was what Pound had in mind, and I think to a good extent it's worked that way.
I wondered if there was any connection between that and extension. Because it was happening in 68, 69, you know, after the merger, so.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't make it quite clear. He talks about this in his papers.
Mm-hmm. No, I think there has been a good deal of concern on the part of Regents and everybody else for a great many years as to whether you can maintain the research mission at the two universities and have all the others with no research mission. And it's been considered important to do that because fiscally there's no way you can operate a UW system if others have a research mission and go on. But the pressures are always there of bright young people at these universities who say, other people are doing research, why don't we?
Mm. Well, you're looking at your watch, and so we'd better stop. But thank you. You make a number of things very clear that work before.